This is New Media Beat on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Akash Singh.
And I'm Crystalie Almanzar. We have media news from many nations today. Russia, France, the United Kingdom, Indonesia, Vietnam, Sudan, Tunisia, Egypt, and China.
From France?
Should journalists be jailed for reporting leaked information? When state secrets are leaked, who should be held responsible? The leaker or the journalist?
From Russia?
Is it safe to cover Putin's Russia? Can foreign journalists report from Moscow? Ask Evan Gertrich, the Wall Street Journal reporter who is still sitting in a Russian prison.
From the UK?
When Hollywood strikes, does the UK bleed? How have the writers and actor strikes in the US impacted the film industry in the UK? How much American money is crossing the bond to make movies in the United Kingdom? Did that money stop during the strike?
From Indonesia?
Why did TikTok have to shut its digital shop in Indonesia? How many Indonesians were shopping on TikTok? Do online shoppers need protection from TikTok? Why is the Indonesian government restricting e-commerce?
From Vietnam?
How free is the internet in Vietnam? Why is the government so strict when it comes to regulating the internet and social media? Just how low is Vietnam's ranking for internet freedom this year?
From the Middle East?
It's been more than 10 years since the Arab Spring toppled authoritarian governments in Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, and Yemen. How important was social media in turning unrest into revolution? Did YouTube and Facebook bring democracy to these dictatorships?
From Sudan.
Is there a free and independent media in the Sudan? Even with all the violence and political conflicts, what role does the government play in controlling the press in Sudan? Can journalists do their jobs in Sudan today?
From China.
How much online privacy can a Chinese citizen expect? Why does the government in China keep such a close eye on the internet? Is there free online expression possible under such tight government surveillance?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
Let's begin with a report about press freedom and government secrets in France. Judy Imsoji has been following the news about a French journalist named Ariane Leveroux, who was detained for reporting leaked information. The secrets came from leaked documents belonging to French intelligence service. Judy, who is Ariane Leveroux, and what was she reporting about that got her arrested?
She's a French investigative leaked documents that claimed the French intelligence services were used to target civilians in Egypt, which led to her detainment.
Judy, how did other journalists and media organizations react to her arrest?
Well, Amnesty International's Katia Rue said she was very worried about Ariane and says it could be a threat to freedom of the press and confidentiality of sources to arrest a journalist for doing their job. Amnesty International's secretary also supported her by saying that France is targeting journalists and not the people committing crimes. She also says that this isn't a case of journalists being restricted and her sources potentially getting exposed, but these actions are a part of a larger assault on journalists who expose secrets of French intelligence services.
Judy, how does Leveroux's arrest put press freedom at risk?
Well, she said herself that she considered her arrest to be scandalous and illegitimate, and its only goal was to prevent her and all journalists from doing their work. Because when a journalist is detained, other journalists may become more cautious and self-center their reporting for fear of similar consequences. This could lead to a decline in investigative journalism and critical reporting and set a legal precedent that makes it easier for authorities to target journalists in the future. It can also pressure governments to use legal measures to suppress journalism and investigative reporting.
Also, how does this impact the way French journalists acquire sources?
When a journalist is detained, it can undermine the trust between journalists and their sources because some sources may become hesitant to share information, fearing exposure and retribution. She also posted a statement on her X account saying, if a judge decides that documents seized by a journalist can be used, who will dare to take the risk of revealing information of public utility? And who will dare to investigate foreign policy and arms contracts?
Does France have a history of putting press freedom at risk?
Yes. In 2019, French journalists found tanks and local videos footage of Yemen fighting. And one of the authors, investigative journalist Matthias Destel, explains that he and his colleagues thought the government owned the arms manufactured that supplied weapons and tanks to Saudi Arabia, which were later used on people in Yemen, and the government was aware of this. After writing an article about this, the Secret Service detained and questioned Desto and two other French journalists.
I am Judy Amasoji. Back to you, Crystal Lee.
Thanks, Judy. Putin's Russia is another risky place for working journalists. Can foreign journalists covering Putin's war in the Ukraine report from Russia without fear of arrest? How do other journalists react when one of their colleagues is thrown in jail? Michael Amato is ready to report on one recent high-profile case, the arrest and continuing detention of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich.
Evan Gershkovich is a 32-year-old reporter for the Wall Street Journal who is currently being detained in Russia. He is an American, son of a Soviet-born Jewish exile. He was born in New York but grew up in New Jersey, where he fell in love with the country of Russia and its culture. Prior to joining the Wall Street Journal, he was a well-known reporter for the Moscow Times. The main countries he covered were Russia, Ukraine, and the former Soviet Union. One of the most influential statements he tweeted about Russia was, "Reporting on Russia is now a regular practice of watching people you know get locked away for years. Seeing what happened to Gershkovich for simply doing his job makes other journalists think twice about covering Russian media, let alone even going to Russia."
Why is he being detained?
He is currently being detained and accused of espionage by the Federal Security Bureau. The Federal Security Bureau is the successor to the KGB. This is the first time Russia brought up a spy case against a foreign reporter since the Cold War. This espionage charge could leave him facing a possible 20-year sentence in prison. These allegations are obviously denied by the Biden administration, his employer, and his closest colleagues. Although his immediate release was demanded, nothing came to light of it. He is still sitting in Russia being wrongfully detained for a charge that he has nothing to do with. Some believe we could witness another trade type of situation, like the release of Russian arms trafficker Viktor Bout in exchange for Brittany Griner. It is believed that the detention and false accusation of Gershkovich could be related to the Russian leadership or retaliation for other grievances. Although some believe there could be a trade in place like the Griner one, it would involve the U.S. and Russia cooperating and working to make this possible, which seems a little far-fetched. Another case similar to this is the holding of Paul Whelan, a former U.S. Marine who has been jailed since 2020. He is currently serving a 16-year sentence in a Russian prison for similar charges to Gershkovich.
And what does this show for the future of journalism in Russia?
The future of journalism in Russia does not look good. The most common belief is that President Vladimir Putin's Russia is simply too dangerous for journalism. There are so many factors to take into account when talking about the future of journalism for a country, one of the biggest being government control. Over the past few years, Russia has increased state control and censorship of media, causing the government's influence to grow over the media. As a result of this, independent journalism has taken a massive step backwards. There is simply little to no free expression for journalists when it comes to media in Russia. Seeing what happened to Gershkovich shows what happens to foreign journalists. With foreign journalists witnessing the events that happened to Gershkovich obviously causes them to rethink covering media in Russia. Of course, there is opportunity to turn this around and exceed expectations and become prosperous in journalism, but that would rely on factors out of the journalist's control. Everything would come down to the government and how they treat the journalist and their views on censoring the media. For New Media Beat, I am Michael Amato. Back to you, Crystal Lee.
Thank you, Michael. The recent strikes in Hollywood crippled the U.S. film industry. The Writers Guild has settled their strike, but the Actors Union is still on strike. How did these strikes affect the global film industry? Let's talk about the impact of an American strike on the film industry in the United Kingdom.
My co-host, Crystal Lee Almanzar, is here to tell us about the British film industry. She has discovered that there are a lot of connections between the film sector in the U.S. and the U.K. How much of the British film production involves American investment and Hollywood production companies? When the U.S. film industry shut down during the strikes, did the U.K. film world suffer? Were productions halted? Did U.K. film workers lose jobs because of American labor troubles? Did British film workers and their unions support the American strikers? Crystal Lee, did the strike in Hollywood have a big effect on the film business in the U.K.?
What a great question, Akash. The U.K. did experience the effects of the Hollywood strike. Movies such as Deadpool 3 and Mission Impossible Part 2 stopped filming. Now, film crews and behind-the-scenes workers are being affected by the strike. Actually, according to New York Times, quote, respect to the British Union for Workers and the behind-the-scenes roles in creative industries, surveyed nearly 4,000 of its films and TV members, and 80% said their jobs had been affected, with three-quarters not working.
How was the UK impacted by the strike?
Not only did the strike affect people's jobs, but it could also affect the UK economy as well. In fact, according to statistics from Social Films, quote, the UK film industry is a significant contributor to the country's economy. According to the British Film Institute, the film, television, and video sectors contributed $12.6 billion to the UK economy in 2019, representing an increase of 35% since 2014. Thousands of crew members had been suspended from production, and because they are technically still under contract, they can't work for another employer. On top of that, they are also not being paid. The uncertainty of when these workers will have a steady income again because of the strike is impacting a large range of people. Additionally, about 75% of UK film workers are out of work and have resorted to looking for jobs elsewhere, such as bars. Some have even had to put their homes up for sale. We must consider the mental toll this has on UK film workers, who are highly skilled and are back to working mundane jobs, or the ones who haven't found work and are still financially struggling.
How did the UK support the US writer's strike?
Well, aside from the fact that the UK has been impacted by the strike, they have stood in solidarity with writers in the U.S. strike and have publicly shown their support. Many British stars have attended rallies and demonstrations in support of the U.S. strike. Additionally, Writers Guild of Great Britain has advised its members not to work on projects for the duration of the strike. If they were to work on the U.S. projects, they would be removed from the membership.
Are British writers and actors on strike too?
They are not on strike, but they have petitioned for the government to create an income replacement scheme for crew members affected by the strike. For New Media Beat, I'm Kristalie Amanzar. Back to you, Akash.
Thanks, Kristalie. Indonesia is a long way from the United Kingdom. Aiden Bongiorno has a report. Most major social media platforms are also e-commerce platforms. Social shopping is a big business all over the world. Should the tech giants of social media be able to control e-commerce everywhere on the planet? Who makes the rules for online shoppers? Governments or big tech? Should the Indonesian government be able to regulate e-commerce for their own citizens? Why did TikTok recently shut down its digital shop in Indonesia? Is TikTok big in Indonesia? Aiden, is Indonesia an important market for TikTok? How many users does TikTok have in Indonesia?
That is a very good question. So to put it straight, Indonesia is TikTok's second largest global market in the world, behind other Asian countries like China. As the country is home to almost 125 million TikTok users. And considering that TikTok is one of the massively popular apps throughout Asia, since it originated there, this is the first time that a country within that region is acting against the platform's growth within the social media commerce.
Why did Indonesia close TikTok shop?
Okay, so to give you a little context about like what the TikTok shop is. So basically, Indonesia was the first country to launch the TikTok shop all the way back in 2021. It was an attempt by the social media platform to increase revenue. The purpose of TikTok shop is for creators and brands to include a shop button while they're live streaming or on a broadcast. It will allow their users to buy products without having to close the app. The ones responsible for the closure of the TikTok shop was the Indonesian government, who feared that the TikTok shop would cause more harm to small Indonesian businesses. In a statement made by President Joko Widodo, he says, "We need to be careful with e-commerce. It can be very good if there are regulations, but can turn bad if there aren't any regulations." The country's trade ministry issued new regulations since then that resulted in a ban of e-commerce through social media platforms. So obviously it's not just TikTok. So it would be like the shopping feature on Instagram, Facebook, etc. And while that hasn't been really confirmed yet, this statement, of course, could be just kind of into consideration. And of course, obviously, with TikTok shop being closed down, it's not the main app itself that's not being banned. So, of course, it just means that TikTok users in Indonesia are no longer able to use the app to sell or buy products. According to the trade ministry, these regulations are meant to protect local merchants, prevent algorithms from dominating the market, and stop the use of personal data for business purposes.
How are retailers reacting?
So, obviously, the reactions to TikTok shop closing were pretty mixed. but for those who mostly use it, they were most of them, of course, are negative. Retailers who have used TikTok Shop feel disappointed about this decision. So one particular retailer named Jennifer Copen, who is a beauty care seller, she states that, honestly, I'm really sad because the product I sell is famous on TikTok. While another person named Ika Irlevantia, who states that the impact that was really felt when TikTok Shop was closed was the ease of buying cheap goods by interacting live with sellers. And those are just some like quotes that for people who have used TikTok Shop before to kind of show or launch their products. But TikTok themselves have agreed to close their shop in Indonesia and have released a statement online regarding it, saying, our priority to remain compliant with local laws and regulations as such will no longer facilitate e-commerce transitions in TikTok Shop, Indonesia.
What is the overall impact?
So following the closure of TikTok Shop, other Indonesian markets saying that this change has provided a positive impact on the country's e-commerce ecosystem, with the rapid increase of share prices in other Indonesian markets. In fact, an economic expert named Johannes Wibowo states that with the closure of TikTok Shop, the social commerce has become more of a place for promotions, with transactions being forbidden. But personally, in my opinion, the overall impact feels mixed. While there are people in Indonesia who see this as a good thing to protect retailers that run small businesses, those who heavily rely on the TikTok Shop their reactions are mostly negative, as they feel kind of disappointed that they think it was much easier to sell their products through the app, and therefore can no longer do that. For Newbie to Beat, I am Aiden Mongiorno. Back to you, Akash.
Thank you, Aiden. Up next, let's talk about the internet in Vietnam. How important is the internet for the growth of the tech economy in Vietnam? For it, investors expect fast internet connections. How much internet freedom is there in Vietnam today?
Jalen Gonzalez has a report for New Media Beat about the state of the internet in Vietnam. You can't have an expanding economy without access to the internet. How does the Vietnamese government balance its need for political and cultural control over the internet with the demands of a growing high-tech economy? Can you attract foreign investments to a country with the limited internet? How do you balance the political restrictions of a one-party communist state with digital capitalism? Jalen, where does Vietnam rank in terms of internet freedom today according to Freedom House?
Thank you, Crystal Lee. According to Freedom House, Vietnam has a whopping 22 points out of 100 they could possibly have, along with slow upload and download speed. The Freedom House stated that authorities have sometimes employed periodic throttling and restricted access to the internet for political or security reasons in the past. It is also said that the government controls most of Vietnam's internet usage, even if companies have licenses to build infrastructure.
What does Vietnam have such a low rank in internet freedom?
Compared to other countries, Vietnam has very low internet freedom score when put against countries such as the U.S. with a score of 76 out of 100, Ukraine with a score of 59 out of 100, or even Iraq with a score of 43 out of 100. According to Freedom House, there are multiple categories that add up together to rank a country's freedom percentage. However, for Vietnam, there are obstacles and limits on content along with the violation of user rights. With the obstacles that Vietnam faces, they experience low upload and download speeds, and the Freedom House speculates that this is because the government doesn't want them to upload and download much. And this is because the government wants to have internet control over them. In a world where technology is beginning to become accessible to everyone, slowing down internet speeds could affect the rate in which Vietnam grows in the world. Limits of content have been worse in previous years. However, Vietnam has made strides for more internet access. According to the RFA, Vietnamese censorship targets higher profile accounts and anything that could possibly threaten their government. In their censorship, they try and block accounts, news organizations, and at times, religion. Finally, in the category that scored the least points, they got 4 out of 10 possible points in violation of user rights. In this category, the Freedom House goes through many different examples of violation of user rights, such as freedom of expression, access to information, press freedom, and finally, they are governed by a judiciary that lacks independence.
What does low freedom and limiting on the internet mean for the Vietnamese people?
Although a good portion of the world seems to be making strides to many different types of equality, it seems as if Vietnam is going to be at a standstill on the internet freedom. According to the RFA, Vietnam as a whole seems to be more controlling as time goes on, and the government doesn't allow for any freedom than they are given now. Along with limiting internet usage and jailing more people, Vietnamese government also collects data from its users. At the same time, it is forcing foreign tech companies like Facebook and Google to comply with government requirements.
Does this affect how much virtual media is broadcasted?
While Vietnam is able to broadcast news and whatnot on the internet, it is considered to challenge the government. They may be imprisoned or censored. A few journalists have experienced this firsthand in Vietnam. According to the RSF, a total of 39 reporters were detained as of today. Virtual clean media as of today is being suppressed in Vietnam because of the Communist Party. General Secretary Nguyen Phu Trang's imposition of more conservative lines since 2016, along with terrorizing and scaring people to remain in the shadows and not speak their minds, people are forced to silence their opinions online pertaining to certain topics, or it's considered to challenge the Vietnamese government. While journalists and all media outlets hold their tongues since the state is, by law, the majority shareholder of their company, the government meets with these departments in order to make sure there is nothing objectionable being published. For New Media Beat, I am Jalen Gonzalez. Back to you, Crystal Lee.
Thank you, Jalen. It has been more than 10 years since the Arab Spring. The Arab Spring was a major political and cultural upheaval in the Middle East. Protesters took to the streets. Dictators were toppled in Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, and Libya. Democracy seemed ascendant. At the time, many observers noted the role of social media in these popular uprisings against authoritarian regimes. My co-host, Akash Singh, has been thinking about the importance of social media during the Arab Spring. Akash, can you give us a brief introduction to the key events of the Arab Spring? When did this take place, and which countries are we talking about?
The Arab Spring, a series of uprisings in the Middle East, took place predominantly between late 2010 and early 2012. It involved numerous countries, with some of the key events occurring in Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, and Libya. During this period, protesters across the region took to the streets to demand political reform, economic justice, and an end to authoritarian regimes. These movements led to significant political and cultural changes, including the toppling of dictators and raised hopes for the spread of democracy across the Arab world.
How did social media platforms such as Facebook and Twitter contribute to the Arab Spring uprising in Egypt?
Social media emerged as a transformative force during the Arab Spring uprisings, particularly in Egypt, where it played a pivotal role in empowering citizens to express their grievances, organize protests, share crucial information, and mobilize support for their cause. The influence on social media platforms such as Facebook and Twitter in amplifying the voices of the Egyptian people and fostering a sense of unity that cannot be overstated.
What role did citizen journalism on social media platforms play in shaping public perception during the Arab Spring in Tunisia?
Citizen journalism on social media platforms, particularly YouTube, played a vital role in shaping public perception during the Tunisian Revolution. Several reports, such as Al Jazeera, examine how ordinary citizens became reporters, documenting and sharing events on these platforms, shedding light on the grassroots efforts that contributed to a more comprehensive understanding of the revolution. The democratization of information through citizen journalism during such pivotal moments underscores the potential for social media to empower individuals in their moment, in their quest for transparency, accountability, and social change. These new avenues of reporting have since reshaped the media landscape, emphasizing the importance of diverse, community-driven narratives in our global discourse.
How did governments in the Middle East respond to the use of social media during the Arab Spring, specifically in Bahrain?
Governments in the Middle East, like Bahrain, responded to the use of social media by cracking down on dissent and limiting online freedoms. An article by Human Rights Watch sheds light on the Bahraini government's actions during this period. For New Media B, I'm Akash Singh. Back to you, Crystal.
Thank you, Akash. Let's head to Africa and talk about journalism in Sudan. Can journalists in Sudan report the news during this violent civil war? Are journalists safe in Sudan?
Amadi Kane is reporting on the media and journalism in Sudan for New Media Beat this week. Before we can discuss the state of the media and journalism in Sudan, we need to recognize the extreme conditions in Sudan today. There is a humanitarian crisis going on in Sudan. Sudan is not a stable, peaceful place. Just how serious is this crisis? Amadi, can you give us a short overview of what is happening in Sudan so that we can understand the conditions that Sudanese journalists are dealing with today?
Absolutely. Essentially, government control and restrictions on information sources have greatly altered the state of Sudanese news media. Journalists in Sudan have faced numerous challenges in the wake of the military coup in October 2021, such as the government and ruling regime of the time have viewed online communication as a threat which handicaps the spread of online news, the accessibility to that news, and it delays the public's consciousness to those matters. Journalists have falsely been accused of spies, and reports on the ground validated by the SJS state. Journalists have been beaten, detained, and interrogated. The fighting has proved disruptive to news gathering, as many journalists, along with their other civilians, have been trapped at home or work due to the ongoing violence on the streets.
What are some major challenges faced by journalists in Sudan?
The military has used state-owned media to spread its own narrative, often with pro-military bias, which makes it challenging for journalists to provide a balanced and independent reporting. Political change allowed for the emergence of new independent media outlets that were not under the control of the state. However, the transitional government imposed media blackouts and censorship measures at various points. This included shutting down media outlets and blocking access to news websites, severely restricting the flow of information. While the initial hopes for increased press freedom were encouraging, the reality on the ground has been riddled by censorship, harassment, and a decline in media freedoms.
How has political upheaval affected the journalism landscape?
Essentially, no one's neutral. Everyone has to pick a side. Unfortunately, even the journalists, it's either you're with or against. And by doing so, that intensifies the government witch hunt. And it's getting a lot of journalists caught up in being detained and intimidated for figuring out if the corruption is ongoing within the journalism state or not. And it's also contributing to how the reality on the ground has been riddled by the said censorship, harassment, and decline in the media freedoms.
Any solutions, initiatives, strategies that could be used to support and or protect Sudanese journalists?
According to Press Gazette Future of Media, the platform developed by Recall in partnership with the Sudanese Journalist Syndicate, otherwise known as the SJS, provides a digital and modern content system that enables journalists to publish stories safely for both domestic and international audiences. Moreover, the SJS aims to advocate for freedom of speech and protect journalists' employment rights. In the midst of this socio-political turmoil, perhaps there is still light at the end of the tunnel for Sudanese news media. From News Media B, I'm Amadi Lee Kane. Back to you, Akash.
Thank you, Amadi. Let's talk about the internet in China. When Chinese people go online, are they free to express themselves? Is there an expectation of privacy? Daniel Jefferson is here in Studio A to talk about the ways that the government keeps an eye on internet users in China. Daniel, earlier, we heard a report about internet freedom in Vietnam. Where does China rank in terms of internet freedom today, according to Freedom House?
China has been ranked as one of the worst countries in the world with a not free rating by Freedom House, which ranks freedom in countries throughout the world. China received a 9 out of 100. They basically can't put anything out there without the government putting a close eye on it to make sure that you as a citizen is not up to anything mischievous. It is possible for citizens to be blocked from certain places on the internet, get fines, or even be imprisoned for their online behaviors and activities.
How does China spy on its citizens?
The government doesn't only spy on its citizens through the internet either. There's also facial recognition technology that China uses that can track all of its citizens with ease. There is not a place in public where you are safe from being tracked. So basically in China, in public, you're being watched, and in the privacy of your home, you're internet activities are monitored.
How do Chinese citizens feel about their privacy being violated?
Most Chinese citizens feel like there is a problem with how much the government is watching them, especially since the government can be secure, the government security can be breached and have all of their information be leaked out into the world. There are many protesters against the amount of surveillance the government has on its citizens. Many of them destroy street cameras or have marches through the streets to let the government know that they don't approve of their privacy being violated. They can risk being thrown in prison for this as well.
Why did the Chinese government spy on its citizens?
They spy on their citizens because through their eyes, they see it as them protecting the country. If the government keeps an eye, close eye on everyone, then everyone will be on their best behavior. And if they're not, then the government will know and put an end to it. Other countries have done this as well to its people, but no other country in the world has it to this extent. Hopefully one day the Chinese citizens will stand up to this and have a change be made to how they can live their lives without being under a microscope. For a New Media Beat, I'm Daniel Jefferson. Back to you, Akash.
Thank you, Daniel. That's all for this week.
Today we heard reports from Aiden Bongiorno, Daniel Jefferson, Crystalie Almanzar, Amadi Kane, Akash Singh, Judy Imsoji, Jalen Gonzalez, and Michael Amato.
Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at newmediabeat.org, when you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.